We have now entered into the final day of Jesus' earthly life. And at this point, we've been reading that Jesus is trembling with just abject fear. We read in chapter 12, "My soul has become troubled or traumatized." Matthew 26, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death." This is so unusual for Jesus, because Jesus is never afraid of people. Not one instance do we see Jesus as being afraid of a human being, a man. He's not afraid of Satan. He's not afraid of demons. The only thing he's afraid of is taking up the cross. Why? Because at the cross, he's going to have to stand under the judgment of God for all of humans. We're going to come back to this when we study that in several weeks. But he is afraid of this. So Jesus never fears a man. He only fears God. And he is deeply, deeply grieved. Now, at this time, you would expect that maybe his boys, in whom he has invested for 3.5 years, would give him a little bit of consolation. No, they just got done arguing for the upteenth time over who is the greatest. They've been doing this throughout the ministry. Mark 9, Mark 10, Luke 22. Now, the very night of Jesus' death, he's about to die, they're still arguing over which one of them they think is the greatest. And Jesus knows that Judas has just betrayed him for 30 pieces of silver. This is right at the night where you would just be like, could you please help me out? You know, I've invested in you so much. Could you please give me a little bit of comfort? Even if you just didn't talk, if we just had a moment of silence, that would be good enough. But no, this is the very night he's being betrayed, the very night that the disciples are boasting with great annoyance to Jesus, and we see something totally, totally unique. Check this out. Chapter 13, verse 1. It was just before the Passover. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew two things. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and he knew that he had come from God and was going to return back to God. And based on this knowledge, this is what prompted him to get up from the meal. He took off his outer clothing, that's his robe, and he wrapped a towel around his waist. Remember, this is right as the disciples are talking about which one of them is the greatest. And very silently, Jesus thinks about, you know, God, I know you. I came from you. I'm going back to you. And that's what gets him to get up and to tie the towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. 12 disciples, 24 feet, a minute per foot. How long does it take to scrub a foot? You know, all these guys are bickering, arguing, and the way that they sat around the table was kind of spread out with their feet away from the table because their feet stunk. So Jesus is just going around the outside when no one's looking. It's night, so there would have been, you know, very little light. He would have been in the shadows back there washing feet. And people may have not even looked, you know, look back and then they see Jesus back there. It's Jesus washing the feet. I bet you could have heard a pin drop in this upper room. What is with this foot washing anyways? Well, this was customary and it was needed. This was in a world before Nike. This was in a world before steel-tipped boots. When you went out on the street, and there was excrement and dung and dirt and sand. You gathered all sorts of stuff into your sandals. And your feet were stanky by the time you got there at the end of the night. And you needed someone to wash your feet. This was a need, and it was custom. Here's the kicker. Rabbis argued over whether a Jewish servant should even have the degradation to have to do this for the person with whom they were working. Gentile servants, they said, yeah, they can wash feet. Women, they treated women like garbage. Women could wash feet. Gentile slaves could wash feet. But even Jewish slaves, they said, I don't know, that might just be too far. So this was the role of a slave, of a servant. And here we see, in just a breathtaking moment of love, Jesus with the towel, with the basin, scrubbing the dirt and the dung off the feet of the disciples. Eventually it gets around to Simon Peter. He sees Jesus. He's going to do every foot around the stable. Gets to Peter. He said to Jesus, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? To which Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will get it. You will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. And Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Peter, being the very sane man that he is, said, you will never wash my feet. And then he replies, then, Lord, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Give me the whole sponge bath, Jesus, is what he's saying. And that's you read the commentators on this. They're like, this is absolutely hilarious. This is metonymy. My hands and my feet and everything in between. So basically he's saying, give me a full body wash. That's what he wants. This is comedy. All right, and Jesus answered, those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you. So Peter, I'm not doing the bath, okay? We're doing the feet. But you are clean. What does this mean? I remember as a kid, we didn't have a shower. I don't know why we didn't have a shower. It was the 80s, all right? We just didn't have showers back then, I guess. But I'd be outside playing all day. We would just, you know, football, basketball, playing in the mud and the muck. You know, it'd be raining, shining. This mom would just be like, go out. Just like go out and play outside. And we would just get dirty, just under the fingernails, face. And then at the end of the day, my mother had the audacity to tell me to climb into the bath and take a bath. And I really didn't feel that dirty. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, I just kind of felt normal. But there's something interesting about taking a bath rather than a shower. See, you shower dwellers, you don't get this. But those of us who grew up with baths, we understand what it was like to get into a bath with all that dirt and filth all over you, and then you actually lay in it. It just settles to the bottom of the water. And you get into the bath, and it's all bubbly, and there's, you know, Kermit the Frog. And at the end of the day, you look at that, and you're like, oh, it is like putrid water in that bath before it goes down the drain. And what Jesus is saying here is that what I'm doing is just washing your feet. If you needed to be cleaned, you would take a bath, Peter. But you don't need that because you've already been cleaned. What does it mean? What it means is that what Jesus has done by virtue of the cross is he has cleaned me of all of the moral filth in my life. All of that has gone down the drain. It is history, fully and totally, completely cleaned. To the point where God, when he looks at me, he can say that he looks at me the way that he looks at his very own son. Perfect, cleaned. Though not every one of you, he says. Whoa, who's that? For he knew who was going to betray him. Judas. Judas, he's saying, he hasn't had his bath. He still has the filth all over him. But you, Peter, you have been cleaned. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. Very good question. What does this mean? Why did he do it? Whenever Jesus would do something, it was for a purpose. What was the purpose that he did this? Well, some people think that the foot washing refers to forgiveness because, you know, Jesus said, you have no part with me if you don't let me wash your feet. And I'm in the minority on this one, but it feels good to be right in the minority. You know what I'm saying? Because this doesn't mean forgiveness. It just doesn't. Jesus said, you are completely clean, verse 10. To what is that referring? And in Colossians chapter 2, verse 10, it says that because of Jesus, you have been made complete. So when we come to faith in Jesus, that means we are totally, fully, completely clean, totally forgiven. And then he does the foot washing. So forgiveness cannot be the same as the foot washing. This is something different. Jesus also presumably washed Judas's feet. So if this is referring to forgiveness, how can this also be applied to Judas? Because John has been replete in saying that Judas never had faith in Jesus, and Judas betrayed Jesus. We'll return to him as a figure later in subsequent teachings. But for now, no, Judas was not forgiven, but he had his feet washed. And finally, verse 14, we're going to read, we're supposed to wash each other's feet. So are we distributing God's incredible forgiveness to other people? No. This isn't referring to forgiveness. It's referring to refreshment. Refreshment. A servant's mindset is what this is referring to. When Jesus says that you have no part with me, the word there is meros. How do you translate it? Part, portion, share. What Jesus is saying is this. If you aren't into washing feet, if you aren't into servant love, if you aren't into sacrificially giving your life away to other people, then you're not with me. True spirituality is about servant love. Not all religions agree on this. Servant love is important, but it's on the periphery. It's tangential. It's important to some degree. Love is at the heart of the spirituality of Jesus. And he says, if you're not into this, Peter, you're not into me. He's asking, in a sense, are you willing to serve? Are you willing to be served? I don't know which is worse, to serve other people and wash their stinky feet, or have my own feet washed, and so forth. Boy, that'd be pretty uncomfortable. Well, what is servant love? What are we learning here? I guess let's try and figure this out. It is not about feeling well. Jesus here did not feel well when he was washing the disciples' feet. This probably took about half an hour to get around the entire circle and wash their feet. He was deeply troubled. He was deeply grieved right at this very moment. He didn't feel up to serving that night. This was not about the timing. There were many other days that would have been way easier for him to serve rather than the final night of his death. This wasn't good timing. He didn't feel up to it on the night before he died. He was not getting what he deserved. Jesus has all of the prerogatives and the utility of the divine attributes. Omniscience, omnipotence. He's the creator of all. He has all that. That's what he deserves, but he chose to give up what he deserves. To put that aside, to lay it aside in this graphic, obscene picture of God himself getting down with a bucket, washing the dirt and the dung off the feet of humans. Sacrificial love is also not about the other person. This isn't some kind of reciprocity. You know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. These were not good people. This was Judas. This was Peter. These were guys who would later, within 12 hours, were going to betray him and run for their lives. These are the people that Jesus was washing their feet. Could they look him in the eye when he did this? That's not what this is about. It's not about how you feel. It's not about the timing or the circumstances. It's not even about the person whom you're serving. It's about sacrificially loving, making the choice from me to you to give out. Now, I'm sure you're wondering at this point, why would anyone want to pursue a lifestyle like this? That sounds terrible. Like, I could think of 100 things I'd want to do besides do this, sacrificially love other people. Let's be honest. We don't want to do that. Why would you want to sacrificially love other people as a lifestyle? I mean, maybe on the weekends, maybe you want to have some kind of a therapeutic feeling that you feel good about yourself. But as a lifestyle, when it's inconvenient, when the people aren't thankful, why on earth would anyone want to do this? We're in luck. The text gives us 5 reasons. Number 1, this sort of love comes from a new identity. Remember, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So that is what got him to get up from the meal and to wash the feet. If you're a person who has no idea where I came from, who I am, or where I'm going. There's no reason you should serve. Again, maybe this could be some kind of a therapeutic feeling that you might get, that you feel good about doing good. Sure. But if you don't know where you came from, who you are, or where you're headed when you die, why would you waste the precious hours of your life pouring into other people? Well, when it comes to the Bible, we have answers to those questions. We came from a loving God. We're not a cosmic accident. You know, we're not just the accidental pregnancy of matter acting on energy and a time and chance. We are fearfully and awesomely made by God. Who we are? We are children of God. When you come to know Christ, that's who you are. And you're about to be an inheritor of the kingdom of God. Like, we're going to inherit the kingdom one day. Yeah, that's who you are. And so when you start to believe that that's true, I don't mean like make believe. I mean believe, trust, that's real. All of a sudden you realize I've got plenty of resources to give out to others. Tons, plenty. Number two, we were loved by God first. We read in verse 13, you call me teacher, you call me Lord. That's right. That's who I am. Now that I, your teacher and Lord, have washed your feet, so also you should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master. No servant is greater than his master. No servant is greater than his master. Nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. I want you to do this. The next time that you're thinking about not serving, you know, it's really not a good night. It's just not a good night. And you know, these people, they don't really respond the way I want them to. And you know, frankly, you know, I don't feel like I'm getting what I deserve around here. What I want you to do is to verbally announce. You can be in the car. You don't need to have anyone listen. But I want you to say out loud these words. You ready? I think I deserve better than Jesus. Might as well say it. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to do it, and if you're going to live your life day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, and you're going to live that way, you might as well just say it. You know, I don't think I deserve this. And I know Jesus did it. I know he did it. But I don't think that I deserve what Jesus did. Number three, giving sacrificially is the key to a happy life. Verse 17, Jesus said, if you know these things, you will be blessed, blessed, blessed. Blessed, totally a contentless word. It has no content. The word makarios in Greek, they knew what it was when the King James Bible was written. They knew what blessed was. Up until 50 years ago, we knew what the word blessed means. Nobody knows what the word blessed means today. But translators refuse to purge this from our Bibles and get better translations. Well, I'm into Bible translation, not just throwing in archaic, you know, Elizabethan English into modern translations. The word makarios in Greek unitically refers to happy, fortunate, privileged. Happy, just go with happy. If you know these things, what things? To be able to sacrificially serve others. If you know that, you're blessed, you're happy if you do it. I remember listening to NPR a couple years ago. They had on this psychologist. They said, we gave $50 to group number A and $50 to group number B. And they said, group number A, we told them, spend the money on yourself. And group number B, they said, spend it on somebody else. Right? Group number A came back and they were less happy than they were before they started the study. How about that? Spending the money on themselves made them less happy. But group number B, group letter B, B is a letter, by the way. Group B came back and they said, actually, we're happier when we gave the money away to whomever, whatever they wanted, when they gave the money away. So the person on NPR said this, I guess the old mantra is true. It is more blessed to give than to receive. And I said to myself, well, that just isn't right. That's not an old mantra. That's JC. He's the one who came up with this. If you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Jesus said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Acts 20, verse 35. This is built into our very nature as people, that as takers, love takers, you will live a perpetually unhappy life. That's the way it is. That's the way we were designed. God is this way. God is a lover. He likes to give out love. He's not a taker. He doesn't need anything. So he made us to be lovers of other people and actually to be happy as a result. Number four, this will make or break us. If you're one of those people like me where when you made a decision to follow Christ, that really meant something to you. Like you're like, I want to be in this for my entire life. Like this isn't a phase. This isn't a fad. This isn't a social group thing. Like this is with me and in him. Like I want to be in this for the rest of my life. And I want to stay with Jesus forever. I'm putting all my chips on Jesus of Nazareth, right? If you're like that, you can identify with that. This right here, this lifestyle of servant love will make or break your life with Christ. How do we know that? Well, after Jesus had said this and done this, he was troubled in his spirit. And he said, "Very truly, I tell you, one of you is going to betray me." Whoa, right on the heels of this teaching on sacrificial love, he says, somebody here is going to betray me, one of the 12. His disciples stared at one another at a loss to know which of them he meant. One of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, that's John of Zebedee, was reclining next to Jesus. Simon Peter motioned to John and said, "Ask him which one he means." See, Peter just got kind of slapped by Jesus and, you know, you don't need a bath and stuff. So Peter very naturally turns to John. He's like, "You ask him, all right? I got in trouble last time. You talk to him." And leaning back against Jesus, John asked him, "Lord, who is it? Who's the betrayer?" Jesus answered, "It is the one to whom I will give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish." Then dipping the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas, the son of Iscariot. As soon as Judas took the bread, Satan entered into him. So Jesus told Judas, "What you're about to do, do quickly." As soon as Judas had taken the bread, he went out of the meeting, and it was night. The entire Gospel of John has been what? Light and darkness, darkness and light. You're sons of the darkness, sons of the light. He entered into the darkness, but the darkness could not comprehend him or overcome him. Judas made his choice, and by nurturing these thoughts from Satan, Satan won the day. And he went out into the darkness. Here's something to consider. What was the final teaching that Judas ever heard from Jesus? Like, he sat through them all, man. He was there from the beginning, all of them. Like, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. And, you know, if your brother sins against you 7 times, should you forgive him? No, 77 times. You know, and this is the way it's going to be at the end of human history when I come back, and it's going to go from bad to worse. Like, he sat through every teaching for 3.5 years. What was the teaching that finally Judas heard, and he was just like, enough. I am done. I am out of here. I am not going to go a step further with you. What was the straw on the camel's back that Judas just said, I can't do this anymore? It was a teaching on sacrificial love. And if you are here and you're looking at your Christian life and you're saying, you know, I'm really not into sacrificial love, and I've been hearing about this, and you think that you're going to be able to make it in your Christian life without this, you are terribly deceived. You will not make it with Christ if you do not develop this. This is at the heart of Jesus. And for you to say, I'm going to reject this, is to say that I'm going to reject following Jesus. What I am not saying is that you need to have a sacrificial life in order to be loved and forgiven by Jesus. What I am saying is that if you don't develop this, your walk and relationship with Christ will disintegrate. And I make no nuance about that. Because if you're into following God, whatever that means, and it's not about other people, that is not following God. Number five. It convinces others of God's love. Jesus said, a new command I give to you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. Interesting. There's many verses in the Bible that say that we should love people that don't know God. Many, many, many passages. This is not one of them. I hope you can see that. This is, as I have loved you, you must love one another. Whoa, so what we do with fellow Christians, how we love them, is a real metric at the heart of our spirituality. This is the central command. Jesus says, by this, by what? By the love that you have for fellow believers, everyone will know that you are my disciples. Like, you can know God through reason. You can know God through evidence. You can know God through direct experience. And you can know God by walking into a room of selfish people like me and you and seeing the love of God in their lives. We live in such a postmodern world, you know, post-structuralist, postmodern, post-foundationalist, where everything's dim and gray and there's no right and wrong, good and evil, truth and falsehood. Everything is just postmodern irony, you know, nobody really knows. And they're kind of traveling through this world. And then they see the warmth of Christian love and they're like, that is not normal. That is different. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. I can't tell you how many times I've seen this happen. People that otherwise have a very, very cold heart toward the idea that God is real, they get around Christians that love each other and they see, they've said it in a number of different ways. You guys are different. This is one of the best groups of people I've ever met. I've had to correct people on that. I'm like, dude, it's not the group. It's not us. We're like you. We're like anyone else. You're seeing God here. That's what you're seeing. God is at work. But here's the condition. You're like, well, I'm not seeing that. Okay, hold on. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So if we don't love one another, there's nothing to see. There's nothing to know. If we do love one another, you know, many people, maybe you're here tonight, you're kind of exploring what you believe. And you're like, I don't know if I can believe what you Christians believe. But my first question is really, can I be one of you people? When I look at Christian people, is it just so strange and odious and weird? Like, I just would never want to talk like that and act like that and be creepy like that. You know what I mean? Like, just gosh darn it, dang doodly-doo. You know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, people looking at us and like you wear different clothing and listen to different music. And like, they look at that and they're just like, gross. Or is it that you see, you know, they've got genuine love. That's something I'm missing. They've got great friendships. I don't have that. Well, if you can see this, you know it. You can know it. You can know it's real. Well, why is it that we don't serve? Let's think through some of the reasons. We don't just walk through life and just do things. I hope you know that. There's certain reasons that we do things. Your thinking precedes your behavior. You don't just muster up a lot of, you know, moral fortitude and go out there and try and do something different. No, your thinking, your thoughts are antecedent to what you do. So the way that you think is going to change the way that you live. So why don't we serve? Well, you might be thinking, you know, I've tried doing all this before, but it was awkward and not really all that enjoyable. If I got to be honest, I tried getting in with people that, you know, I don't really know and trying to build them up, but it's really, honestly, it was pretty awkward and I didn't enjoy it. Man, I wonder how Jesus felt. What would the word be? Awkward. That's how he felt. I bet he felt awkward sitting there scrubbing the feet for 24 minutes. 24 feet, 1 minute apiece, 24 minutes scrubbing the feet. Yeah, I bet that felt a little bit unenjoyable. I don't think he enjoyed that. I don't think he was just sitting there, chip, chipperoo, man. I just loving washing these feet, just feeling so I think it felt weird. I think he felt strange. I bet everyone was staring at him while he was doing. Could you imagine trying to go out and serve and everyone around the room is just staring at you, not talking? Like, wouldn't that make you feel a little bit strange? Yeah. How many times did you try this? I tried serving before. This isn't something that you just dabble in. It's something that you dive into. People saying, well, I tried servant love. Yeah, everyone's tried that. Everyone's tried it. Everyone on earth, whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, that doesn't matter. Everyone's tried servant love. We're not talking about, you know, sticking your toe into the water, seeing the temperature. We're saying diving into the water. This is a lifestyle change. Jesus said, this is an example I have set for you. The way I have loved you is the way that you should love. How did Jesus love? Oh, I just tried it a little bit once in a while. No. His entire life was love. That was it. That was all of it. Diving into this. You know, really, I think we exaggerate feeling awkward. First of all, why is it so bad? Of course you feel awkward. You ever go on a date? You ever go on a date before? Yeah, it's awkward for a little bit. You ever talk to somebody you don't know? Yeah, there's some awkwardness for 2 minutes, maybe three, at most five. Really, if you set it next time, set a timer about how awkward it is, and then look at the timer when it stopped being awkward. That might make it awkward. Don't do that. All right. But the point is, you're not going to be awkward perpetually for like 2 hours. It's going to be a little bit awkward for a little bit. Is it worth 2 minutes of feeling awkward to love another person? If you're saying, no, it's not worth it, then it's not that it's too awkward, it's that you're too selfish. That's really the issue. I don't know what to do or say. I'm afraid of failure. You're washing feet. That's what you're doing. What, are they going to be dirtier when you're done? Like, I messed this up. Oh, it's so bad. There was poop on there earlier. You can't screw this up. People that really psych themselves out, oh, I need so much training and equipping, and I don't know what to do. You are totally, come on, stop it. Stop that. You just need to get in there and you need to try. And if you're like, well, I'm afraid, you know, failure, I don't know what to say or do, and I'm not good with my words, I'm awkward and stuff, I'm strange, and I don't know how to relate. Yeah, I get that. But if you go in and you're like, okay, I'll never do that again because you're too awkward and strange and everything, then the focus is still on self. Don't you see that? That wasn't sacrificial love at all. That was still self-love. That you're still thinking about me, myself, and I, and that's gumming you all up. Bad decision. Nobody ever initiates with me. Nobody ever initiates with me. My response is, really? Nobody? Nobody. No one. Ever. Ever? Nobody. Ever. And I know I've said this to people when they make these extreme statements, you know, nobody, never, ever, anybody. And they're like, okay, that's just semantics. No, it's not. It's not semantics. You made a statement where you think nobody has ever initiated with you. That is not true. It's false. What you've done is you've just totally magnified this idea that no one ever loves me, and it's just not true. People have initiated toward you. And really, what we're talking about here is not about who initiates with me. What we're describing here is that we have the ability to initiate with others. We're never held hostage by how other people respond. Don't you see that? People are like, oh man, this is so difficult. It's so, you know, hard to be able to live a sacrificial life. No, this is a liberating message to know that no matter how she responds to me, how they act in return, I am never stopped from loving other people. What I'm going to do is always going to be to move toward others, and no one's going to be able to stop me from doing that. Whether they initiate, whether they respond, they reciprocate, or not. I'm having a bad day. You know, today is just a bad day. Okay, define bad day. How would you define the word bad day? Like, if you talk to Jesus and you're like, hey, I didn't serve tonight. He's like, why not? And you're like, I had a bad day. And he's like, I had a bad day once. You may have read about it. Serving. This is the best medicine for bad days. You know, why is it that you have more bad days than me or anyone else? Why is it that some of the best servants that I know, they also endure the hardest suffering? They have bad days too, just like you and me. Somehow they're able just to keep on going, where we are all gummed up with our, I don't know if I can really serve today. It's been such a bad day. Hey, man, if you can get out of your head and get into somebody else's life, you're going to discover that was a really good day to push through to the other side and to see God's love pouring through you. You leave those nights driving home in the car just like, man, so happy I decided to show up tonight. That was great. I'm hurt and annoyed by other people. True. People hurt you. You're like, Christians? Yes, Christians. Maybe more than non-Christians in your life. You're following God. Christians might hurt you more. You say, how do you figure? Because they're closer to you. The people that are closest to you hurt you the most. The people closest, they annoy you the most. But I guess my response would be, do you ever hurt or annoy others? See, we're hypersensitive toward how people annoy us. We're hypersensitive toward how people hurt us. But we're totally insensitive toward how we hurt and annoy others. If we could just get a glimpse into how I affect other people, how I focus on myself, how I talk about myself, somehow I'm always able to make the conversation about me, you know, all of a sudden you would realize I really do this quite a bit. And yet there's people around here that are gracious and loving toward me. But I refuse to be able to extend that grace and love toward others. Now, these really aren't good reasons. So, how do we get started? Three ideas. First, you got to let the love of God into your heart. John says in 1 John 4:16, we have known and believed the love of God. You got to trust in God's love and let that love into your life. We're not saying here that you're just trying to puff yourself up and give this out. You need a source of love, transcendent love, something that you don't have in and of yourself to be able to give out to others. So this means, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard people say, well, you need to get into the Word. You know, you need to pray. Why do they say that all the time? This is why. You're operating out of a dry reservoir of love. You have nothing to give. No wonder it just feels like terrible trying to get in with people because you got nothing to give. So sitting there before God daily, getting His love and thinking, praying about other people. How can I give this out? Yeah, that would be the first step, number one. Number two, if you're anything like me, you weren't sure how to talk, you would say things, and then late at night you'd just be going, why did I say that? Stupid, you know? You can get around people that are a little bit further down the road in this area. You know, why is it that people really respect him? Why is it that she seems to have a really big influence on other people? They seem to really feel loved by her. But when I try it, it doesn't seem to work. Sit next to those people. I had a friend that used to say to me, he was like, James, I want you to come with me and just sit next to me. And I was like, I can do that. He's like, you don't have to talk. And I was like, I can do that. He said, and I'd prefer it if you didn't. And I was like, that hurt. But anyways, and I would just sit there and watch him do his thing. And, you know, reading is good. Reading books are good stuff. But sitting next to a person where you actually watch them do this, this is how we learn. Why did he do that? And you can pick up these skills on how to love others. Finally, you got to move from talking about this to actually doing it. Oh, yeah, here we go. That's so legalistic. You're saying we actually have to go out and, like, love people? We got to just go do it? What is this, Nike? You know? No, it's not legalistic. It's scripture. What did Jesus say? If you know these things, you will be happy if you talk about them. If you know these things, you'll be happy if you pray about them. I mean, maybe thinking and talking and praying, those are all good things. But let me tell you this, don't be mistaken. You will not get happiness into your life by talking and praying and thinking about these things. At least Jesus never promised that. If you're not loving others, look no further. Because this is where it's at. You actually have to go to the point where you say, I believe this, and I'm going to go do it. I'm going to actually take a step of faith, even though I feel uncomfortable in my own skin. Even though I don't know what I'm going to say, you're just going to say, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to try. God, I'm showing up here tonight to try. Give me an opportunity. Open up a door so that I can serve your people. And you're going to see that these skills grow. You're going to see that the love in your life is just going to blossom, very wholesome. You really enjoy this. You wouldn't want it any other way. You wouldn't want a life anything other than this. The way of Jesus, servant love.